This is John Martinka and another interview for our Getting the Deal Done podcast series. My special guest today is Mario Juarez. His company is StoryCo because he helps people and companies tell their story. He's an expert at getting them to elicit emotion. And one of the things he has shared with me is, it seems like common sense, but it's not widely known in the corporate world about how important stories are. And I'm assuming that's because they get tied up with facts and figures versus the stories. So Mario, welcome.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, you know, yourself and how you got into having your own company in the story business.
Sure. I, from an early age, was a person who only ever thought that he would be a journalist. From my, grade school days, my mother used to tell me, you're going to be a journalist, because I was always writing stories that looked like news stories. I wrote the newsletter for my Boy Scout troop, and got a journalism degree, and went out and had for about 10 years, had a just really terrific journalism career, working for a variety of outfits like National Public Radio, Alaska Public Radio, the Hartford Current, Seattle Times. And one day in the very end of the 1980s, I was invited to spend a very short stint at a place that I'd never heard of. It was a little software company called Microsoft. And I walked in the door and my life was forever changed, because I had the sense that I was in a situation where there really was a chance where the world was going to be changed. And getting the chance to go in and apply my skills as a communicator was a once in a lifetime thing. And I had a fantastic career. I was at Microsoft for more than 25 years doing all different kinds of roles, and they were all storytelling roles. Near the end of that tenure, the company got a new CEO, a guy named Satya Nadella. And for a brief stint, I had the good fortune of working on his communications team close in with him. And I could see the way that he was operating was different from his predecessors, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer. And that storytelling was something he understood, that he valued. In fact, it was a real lever for him and how he was going to change the culture and reinvent the company. And after that, I took another role elsewhere in a different part of the company, but I began to find myself obsessed with the idea of storytelling as what in Microsoft parlance is called a competency, which is a particular skill that derives directly, or that contributes directly, to successful outcomes. And I came up with a concept that storytelling can be operationalized, that you can measure the value, that you can change targeted outcomes. And I did this purely as a side project, just to help folks in this new organization that I had gone into. And long story short, it just took off. It was a passion project that overtook my life. And within a year and a half, more than half of my time was flying all around the world, giving this workshop. I ended up training at that point about, 8 to 10,000 employees. And I got together with a set of executives, and we agreed that it would be a great idea for me to just, that I would be able to exercise my passion on this more effectively, personally, and actually in a contribution to the company as a independent operator. So 3 years ago, I started StoryCo, and it's been an incredibly cool ride.
Okay. What are some of the biggest mistakes in communications that you've seen and been able to help?
You put your finger on one of the biggest right at the beginning, which is that focus on data, focus on metrics, which is only getting worse as the world becomes more data-driven, as more and more people say, we're a data-driven company. And another factor to it is that people simply stick by the parameters that are laid out in the charter or the vision or the operating rules of the company. And if you run any company, anyone that's ever tried to run a company understands that there are so many variables that are disciplines around which you operate, that stepping outside of those boundaries can feel very risky. There's a sense of storytelling being this alien skill that doesn't map, that doesn't fall neatly inside of those boundaries. And what you end up with is companies create their own language industries, big corporations set up their own terms. It's almost like when you walk into the doors of an Amazon or Microsoft or even many smaller companies, you sort of shed your way of being at the door and you walk in the door and it's a different language, and cultures reinforce this. And people lose sight of the factors that surround good storytelling to their detriment. And really huge part of what I do is to just reacquaint people with these things that we do natively day to day outside of work, even inside of work, a lot of times around the water cooler, that are incredibly satisfying, they're incredibly powerful, and that simply just needed to be guided into the mix for people to really change things. And I've, you know, I've seen this over and over.
Okay. So can you share a couple success stories, and confidentially, of course?
Sure. You know, there are two brands of success stories to me that are extremely gratifying. One of them is the big organizational, and the other one is personal. Organizationally, you know, I work with a lot of teams at Microsoft, and I work with a couple of mid-sized companies and others that regard, that have an awareness, usually leadership has an awareness, that there's something missing, that we're not, quote unquote, telling our story, that we're not reaching out and connecting. And this becomes so pervasive that it sort of becomes embedded in people's mindset of the culture. Like, we are really bad at this. This is, think of one team that I dealt with in particular, where they were an operational team deep inside the operational guts at a big company, and they felt like this was a liability for them. And I worked with that group for a period of months. We did workshops and one-on-one coaching. We did this really cool event where we basically had internal TED Talks. This is one of my coolest offerings, is working with a subset of people, coaching them one-on-one, and having an event inside the organization where folks, peers in the org, stand up, tell these really amazing, like really TED Talk quality stories that reflect the value and the meaning of the work that in some way tie to an operational goal. This one team did all of this, and they came back to me. It's funny, about a year and a half later, another team came to me and they said, hey, you know, we work with these other folks, and we jointly present, and they keep winning. They keep getting everything better than, and they're all these great storytellers. Every time they present to executive leadership, they're like the star of the show. And so we went to the leader and we said, hey, how do you do this? How is this done? And it was the leader of the group that I had mentioned before that was so bad at it. And they had taken it on as a value, as a competency in their org, and it really transformed their standing in a really harsh competitive internal landscape. That's the kind of a great, you know, canonical version of that. The more gratifying the ones, though, John, really are when I work close in with people, the individuals that I work with who are aware that they need to express themselves. They feel unseen and unheard. They feel, in many cases, that they're in the wrong place, the wrong role, the wrong team, and building their story unlocks things. I had a woman come to me very early on in this and came to my office that I need to talk to. She participated in one of my workshops, and she sat down and explained that she couldn't do her job because her children had been kidnapped, had been stolen from her. She was traveling and she got a call from the State Department telling her, we're so sorry, but your children are gone. And she didn't know what this meant until she realized that her husband, who was a Tunisian national, had taken the kids out of the country and brought them to Tunisia. They were estranged in early stages of the divorce. And she, because of the relationship between Tunisia and the United States, had no ability to do anything but go and visit them in Tunisia. So this was the thing that was in her life. And I worked with her, and she had some ideas about how she wanted to go provide computers to the schools in Tunisia. She visited her daughters. There was no tech there. And this was aside from her job. Fast forward to today, she now works for IBM. She's an international development director. Her whole life shifted, her whole career shifted. She spends most of her time living in Tunisia. Her children now live with her. And I talked to her about a year ago. She came into town and I sat down with her and she said, you know, the story that we built, that she and I worked together with, which was a video that we worked together to create with just her telling her story and mapping it to her ambition to get some technology into Tunisia, which was a huge phenomenon. It was a phenomenal thing. She put it online, she put it in a couple places, one of these things that thousands of people saw. And she said, you know, that story changed my life. Telling that story changed the whole direction of my life, and it reunited me with my children. And to me, that was the moment when I was like, okay, you know, I've earned the air that I breathe on planet Earth to be able to help somebody at that level. So the work is very gratifying.
What are the top few elements of a good story you can share? What makes it a good story that captivates people?
Sure, always an experience of human transformation. And that's a dry definition with a lot of power behind it. And the critical word there is experience. I tell my people that I work with, if you want to be a storyteller, if you say, I'm going to be a storyteller, then I say, think of yourself as an experience generator. I mean, stories are virtualized. Storytelling is the original virtual reality. Because when you tell a story, whether it's verbally or with photos or video, any rendition, any iteration of a story is something that is generating a human drama that is rich with emotion. You know, there's a guy in California, a guy named Paul Zak, a bunch of really interesting research around the dynamics of storytelling. And he's measured the blood chemistry of people when they listen to stories and noted the changes that are observable in a condition where someone is reading a dry document relative to listening to a compelling story. And he's determined that there are, you know, he finds these two chemicals. He finds a neurochemical called oxytocin, which is affiliated with love and emotion and a mother holding a baby, and the stress hormone cortisol, which comes out of the adrenal gland, which is kind of a fight or flight stress piece. And these are indicators that really good stories have these two qualities. The first thing they do is they create a sense of empathy with the audience. So stories always connect with the audience. As a storyteller, good storytelling inspires something inside of the audience where they feel a resonance. They feel a sense of recognition and understanding. And then you throw trouble into the mix. You throw some element of stress. Some, you know, stories are usually about problem solution. And you know, researchers speculate that the role of story in human evolution is to virtualize trouble, virtualize problems in ways that spare people from having to have experiences themselves, but also are fully pleasurable because they're identifiable and we get the mix of chemicals and emotions and feelings and ultimately the learning, that transformation that occurs at the end is, you know, the value. And so, you know, in the early days when people were telling stories, sitting around like the fire or whatever it was, you know, when one person suffered some near disaster, when some person had a trauma, a struggle, that person could go back to the tribe, tell the story, and now that learning was in the minds of everyone who heard it. So it's a way to collectivize our knowledge. It's a way to build that cultural sense of what does it mean to be us. Very, very long-winded answer. I hope that was useful.
Okay, yeah, it was. Let's finish up with, tell us what a good situation is for you to help. In other words, a good prospective client for you. Type of company, size of company, location, anything.
You know, my clients so far have been mostly companies that have more than 100 people in them. Companies where there's usually some function where there is a marketing department. There are people that are dedicated to building the message. However, that appears to be evolving. I just got a client that's a little startup company, a little security company selling security technology. And then of course, you know, I also work a lot one-on-one with people. So I would, the sweet spot is a large, mid-sized large company where there is a need, there's some communications machinery in place and people that are focused on it that I can go in and help them evolve their understanding of storytelling. And then I also roll up my sleeves a lot and do build messaging frameworks and actual story artifacts. But I don't want to limit it because, you know, I'm very fortunate in the sense that I do have the luxury of being able to I'm working with a group now called Humanize Homelessness that's trying to drive awareness of, you know, the humanity involved in this horrible crisis of homelessness. And I'm working with their team to help tell stories of folks that are living in these tents. And that's a passion project for me. And I do that totally pro bono. Anybody that is listening to this that felt like, hey, I just would really love to you know, get an hour of your time. I'm a very expensive engagement. So if that were the case and someone wanted to talk to me, they would probably be required to buy me a latte. Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty open. For me, this is a grand adventure. I feel like the luckiest person in the world because I do the thing that I love and I go deep every day on it, and it sometimes it challenges and stresses me, but man, it never feels like work.
Okay. Well, that is really important. And I will just share in one of my books and the one on buying a business. In the first page, I go over all the reasons people buy a business. And I say most audiences never get the most important one, and that is to have fun. And you sound like you're having fun at what you do, which is tremendous.
Yeah, wiser words were never spoken than those first ones in that book. I hope people pay attention to that.
Thank you for being here. And for people who want to get a hold of him, his website is mario-juarez, mario-juarez.com. And it's mario@mario-juarez.com. And phone number is 206-650-1056. And take him up on his offer of a latte.
Please.
It's a really good investment. Mario has spoken to a group of my clients and they got a lot out of it on learning why stories sell. Let's put it that way.
Stories sell. And they make you feel something. And we're all in this post-pandemic world really looking to feel things that matter.
Okay. So thank you, Mario.
You are so welcome, John. Thanks for having me.